There's a kind of excitement on Capitol Hill. Have you heard them up there in the Senate?
Could it be? Yes, it could. Something's coming, something good. If I can wait.
She makes me think of somebody with a great legal mind.
Something's coming, I don't know what it is, but it is gonna be great.
I was very impressed with her knowledge, her experience.
Come on, something, come on in. Don't be shy, meet a guy, pull up a chair.
She is going to be a fantastic, superb Supreme Court Justice.
Whoa! Supreme Court nominee Sonia Sotomayor makes the rounds, meeting the senators in advance of her confirmation hearings. Kind of a both sides of the aisle story.
I got a feeling there's a miracle juke gonna come through, coming to me.
Well, sure, if you're a Democrat. It's The Takeaway.
All across America, this is The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI.
Good morning, everyone. Wednesday, June 3rd. Call it A Place for Sotomayor, our little musical there on the Hill. Todd Zwillick will be around to talk about it later. I'm here with Andrea Bernstein. Good morning, Andrea.
Good morning, John. Coming up this hour, hints of change in Iran. We'll go live to Tehran for an explanation from our partners at the BBC. Plus, drinking your way into a time warp.
What?
We'll see what's behind the trend of bars going speakeasy and pouring ancient cocktails. All this and more ahead, but first the headlines.
And in the headlines, President Obama arrives in Saudi Arabia next hour to kick off his Mideast visit with a meeting with King Abdullah. They'll talk about the Israeli-Palestinian peace process and Iran's nuclear program. The next stop is Cairo. The president will give a major address on America's relations with the Muslim world, and we'll have a conversation previewing the trip and all the details in just a moment. Al-Qaeda's number two band talks about the president's trip in a new audio tape. Ayman al-Zahawari says the speech can't erase what he sees as American offenses toward Muslims. He's urging Egyptians to reject President Obama and says those who welcome him to the country are, quote, slaves.
France says debris in the Atlantic matches the missing Rio to Paris flight. 228 people were on board. There's no sign of them in the wreckage. The plane reported electrical problems before losing contact with aviation officials. Searchers now have to piece the wreckage together for clues on what happened. Christophe Prazak with the French military says they'll be looking for the flight data recorders.
We'll have to look for the black boxes. And then, if it's possible, we will have to reach them and to bring them back to the surface.
The accident investigator says there were no signs the plane had problems before taking off. There were two Americans on board the flight, an older couple living in Brazil. They were headed to Europe on vacation.
Back in the U.S., bankrupt auto execs have some questions to answer on Capitol Hill. Leaders of General Motors and Chrysler testify in the Senate today. Some dealers are also testifying. A decision to cut off many dealerships isn't popular in Congress. Dealers are often pillars of the community in small towns. Now to sports and hockey, the Stanley Cup Finals. The Pittsburgh Penguins beat the Detroit Red Wings last night. Detroit leads the series 2-1. The S&P and the Dow closed up yesterday just barely. The Dow kicks off at 87.40. The S&P starts trading at 9.44. So parenthood, that's the subject this morning for you on The Takeaway, 877-8-MY-TAKE or MyTake at thetakeaway.org. Parenting makes you wise, right, Andrea?
Very wise.
Right. So we want your advice,
right,
your wisdom, and maybe some of it is a little scary, okay? Michael Lewis is going to be on the program a little bit later. We want to know advice for parents from parents, 877-8-MY-TAKE or MyTake at thetakeaway.org.
The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, encouraging discussion about what it means to do the right thing. ResponsibilityProject.com.
The Takeaway is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and by the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, advancing journalistic excellence in the digital age. More information about the Foundation's digital initiatives at KnightFoundation.org.
You're listening to The Takeaway.
Good morning, everyone. John Hockenberry here with Andrea Bernstein. Good morning, Andrea.
Good morning.
Lots to talk about this morning. We will be checking back in with Todd Zwillick on Sotomayor's visit to the Senate yesterday and more visits coming up today. But President Obama arrives in Saudi Arabia at about 7:25 Eastern time. There's a welcoming reception in Riyadh. King Abdullah officially welcoming President Obama. And there was a pre-arrival gift. Saudi Arabia claims it is willing to accept Yemeni prisoners from Guantanamo. And that would be a significant victory for Obama's plan to shut Gitmo and to get some of the detainees at Gitmo to be hosted in countries around the world. There's been a lot of resistance to that. Saudi Arabia saying it will take Yemeni prisoners. Joining us now is Noah Feldman, professor of law at Harvard. He's on the line from Boston. And Noah, we invited you on the program because basically I'm a little bit tired of all these meetings and talking about who's friendly to whom, what the smiles said. Really, what we're talking about here, it seems to me, with this Middle East visit is a test of a fundamentally new approach to the Middle East that was proposed by Saudi Arabia during the worst days, at least from the Saudi perspective, of the Bush administration, a Saudi plan for Arab-Israeli peace. First of all, Noah Feldman, welcome to the program, and remind us what the Saudi plan is, if you could.
Thank you again for having me. The Saudi plan, which came out in 2002, when, as you say, in the wake of the 9/11 attacks, the Saudis desperately had to do something to make themselves look like they weren't America's enemy number one, is a plan that they actually got 22 Arab states to sign on to. And it said, in pretty general terms, that if Israel would withdraw to the 1967 borders and reach a just settlement with the Palestinians, that they and those other countries would recognize Israel, fully recognize its right to exist, and engage in full diplomatic relations with it.
Now, Noah, that seems to have evolved in the years since 2002 to a discussion, and correct me if I'm wrong, that essentially the Saudis are prepared to deliver diplomatic recognition if the Israelis would just agree to some sort of final status talks. Is that a fair characterization?
It is, except that all of those words are diplomatic speak, which means that they're completely flexible and can be made to mean almost whatever the speaker wants them to mean or the listener wants them to mean. So final status talks is a kind of code word that some people think means, well, that's just a conversation about what will the Palestinian state look like and what will the Israeli state look like. Other people think it means immediately recognizing, for example, the Palestinian right of return, which is in fact a topic itself of great controversy. And there's a lot of question about who has to move first. Do the Arab states have to move first? Or does Israel have to move first? And again, that may sound like a ridiculous debate, but in diplomacy, timing is everything.
Oh, well, of course timing is everything. And let's take the pieces apart for a moment. First of all, what is the assessment among scholars and Middle East analysts of whether Saudi Arabia can actually deliver under any circumstances, whatever the timing, 22 nations recognizing Israel diplomatically with embassies and ambassadors and the whole ball of wax there?
When the price of oil is high, the Saudis have a lot of leverage. And it certainly seems conceivable that what the Saudis could do is offer cover to any Arab state that actually wanted to do a deal with Israel. And, of course, in the case of most Arab states, they don't have a major incentive not to do a deal if there's something attractive on the table for the Palestinians. Notice, though, that those Arab states do not include Iran, which is not an Arab state, and which is Saudi Arabia's nemesis in the Gulf region. And I think a lot of Israelis are saying, at least in the last several years, that it's all well and good if Arab states will make peace with them, but if the Iranians remain on the other side and have nuclear weapons, that peace is actually of more limited value than it otherwise would be.
Well, let's take the Iran issue out for a moment. We will have time to talk about it in a second. What do you make of this good faith gesture of taking Yemeni prisoners from Guantanamo? We should remind our listeners that a lot of Yemeni or from southern Saudi Arabia, Saudi nationals were a part of the whole 9/11 operation. And so this would have some sensitivity, I would think, on the part of the Saudis. What do you make of it?
Well, as you know, one of President Obama's biggest practical problems is that he promised, as a campaign matter, to close Guantanamo. But there's no place really to put many of the people who are in Guantanamo. We have the general view in the United States that you can't send Yemenis back to Yemen because no one will really keep a close eye on them, and there's a reasonable chance that they could get involved in terrorist activities again. So it helps President Obama that the Saudis say they'll take them, but he's very far from out of the woods for two reasons. One is that, as a matter of international law, it's always a bit challenging to send nationals to a country that is not their own. So there actually will still be a claim that those Yemenis can make in the U.S. courts, because the Supreme Court has said that they can go into court, that says, don't send us to Saudi Arabia, we're not from there. The second bit is they'll also be able to argue that they're afraid of being tortured in Saudi Arabia. And although our government will say, oh, no, no, the Saudis never torture anybody, that will be up to a court to decide.
Right. And, of course, your credentials as a professor of law at Harvard, of course, very much in evidence there, Noah Feldman. Let's get back to the American side of the equation here. Do leaders in the Muslim world and on the street believe that Barack Obama has a chance to deliver something called final status talks, a discussion of the right of Palestinian return, a discussion of the status of East Jerusalem from the Israelis? And is that what's on the line here on this visit?
The short answer is not this time around. The reason is that even if President Obama has all of the prestige of his office and the international acclaim that he enjoys, right now the Israeli government under Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is not a government that is speaking in positive terms even about formally recognizing a Palestinian state. And the reason for that, in turn, is that after Palestine's elections a couple of years ago, Palestine split, its government split into two components, a Hamas-led component, which dominates in Gaza, which so far itself doesn't recognize the idea of Israel's right to exist in a two-state solution, and a more moderate government based in the West Bank. So, and then the Israeli public reacted to that by electing a more right-wing government. So on both the Palestinian side and the Israeli side, you have people either in charge or partly in charge who are very skeptical at this point about doing any sort of a deal. And President Obama, the one thing he can't do is change the leadership in those countries overnight. So this is the first step, a kind of first installment in President Obama's Middle East policy. And I would just add, he has no choice but to make it. President Bush was so heavily criticized regionally and globally for not paying enough attention to the Middle East that President Obama has to engage, even though he, his advisors, and the people in the region all know that the odds of success right now are extremely low.
Well, I gather what you're saying is that the principal momentum behind the sails of Obama here is not so much an interest in the region to move forward, but momentum from the negative views of George W. Bush. That's what's sort of pushing Obama forward at this point. Let's hear in the voice of the president talking to the BBC yesterday, you can hear some of the sense of this skepticism, I think, that you're talking about.
We're going to do everything we can, because not only is it in the interest of the Palestinian people to have a state, it's in the interest of the Israeli people to stabilize the situation there, and it's in the interest of the United States that we've got two states living side by side in peace and security.
Noah Feldman, I mean, there's a sense of, all right, let's just be realistic here, which is Obama's way, but do you have a sense that the Obama administration wants to kind of sidestep the problems between Hamas and Fatah in the Palestinian movement and move to something bigger, hoping that the Palestinians will come together?
That's sort of their only bet right now. You know, any deal between the Palestinians and the Israelis first requires the Palestinians themselves to come together on one page. And as I was saying, nobody could really do that on their own. So the idea is to try to leverage the support of other Arab countries, for example, so that they'll tell Hamas and Fatah, you have to sit down together, you have to do something, because we want you to. So, you know, that's the best of the available options right now. But the fact that the president in that nice passage is still talking as though he has to convince the Palestinians and convince the Israelis that they each need a two-state solution shows you just what dire straits we're in, because as long ago as 1999, big majorities in both areas were prepared to say exactly that. And then, you know, things got much, much worse, and now it's really challenging even to convince Israelis and Palestinians that they need two states. So he's facing a very serious challenge.
Noah Feldman, it's Andrea Bernstein. Why would the Saudi plan hold sway? I mean, it's been kicking around, as you say, since 2002, and it doesn't involve Iran. Israel's skeptical. The Palestinian parties don't agree. Why would this visit and the Saudi plan bring the peace agenda forward?
You know, Andrea, sometimes all politics is a kabuki theater, and Middle East sort of makes that even more extreme. Here, President Obama needs things from countries in the Arab world, and we saw that today with the offer of the Saudis to hold Yemenis. One way to show respect for them, to signal to them so that they can tell their citizens that they are doing something about the Palestinian problem, is to talk about a plan that they put forward. So he's actually helping those countries by talking about their plan, even though everybody knows it's not extremely likely to go forward. And the reason is that ordinary people in the Arab world care about the Palestinian issue. They don't care about it as the most pressing issue in their lives, but polls regularly show that they do care about it, much in the way that Jews all over the world care about the situation of Israel.
Well, certainly Muslims are going to be listening when Barack Obama gives this speech tomorrow. He arrives in Saudi Arabia in just over an hour. Noah Feldman, professor of law at Harvard, thanks so much for setting up some of the issues on the table there. He's a professor at Harvard speaking to us from Boston. Thanks, Noah.
Thank you.
Dylan, do you have any kabuki music there? I think we should roll some, maybe. Oh, we'll stick with this. We'll be right back.
You can email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org or call us toll-free at 877-8-MYTAKE.
869-8253.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.